A couple of years ago, I read a book by Michael Chabon. And for those of you who don't know, he wrote Wonder Boys and The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. Great books. He released a collection of essays called Manhood for Amateurs, and it's him just talking about growing up and being a father. And there's one thing in the book that stood out to me. In one of his essays, he talks about the fear of the future. When he was a kid, the idea of the future was exciting. There was going to be new technology, new foods. You can fly to space anytime you wanted. And he mentions that his kids don't have the same enthusiasm for the future. You can blame the media, you can blame the cynical nature of teenagers, but that enthusiasm for the future, the Jetsons flying cars, it doesn't exist. Kids today are worried about running out of water and fuel. We seem to be lacking the great optimism that past generations held. But maybe there are still pockets of optimism in boardrooms and on conference floors with people in suits that have shiny shoes. They want to sell you their sparkling vision of the future, their spacecrafts to Mars, their artificial intelligence, and maybe immortality. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast, episode 46. Before we get to our main story, let's discuss the acquisitions that took place over the last 7 days. IBM can't have a conference without mentioning an acquisition, and they delivered. IBM is set to acquire Sanofi Technologies for hybrid cloud computing. The deal is in place to help IBM enhance its elasticity capabilities. Basically, they want to meet the complexities of the hybrid cloud environment through advanced analytics. IBM is acquiring this company for an undisclosed sum. The big news early last week was that AT&T was going to acquire Time Warner. Why do I feel like someone is buying Time Warner every 5 years? AT&T is purchasing the company for $85 billion, which is about 22 times its annual revenue at the moment. And it's the same story as Verizon's acquisition of Yahoo and AOL. Telecom isn't bringing in the bacon, so AT&T is looking for other revenue streams. They want to generate content. And Time Warner generates a lot of content. They own CNN. They own HBO. They own the Cartoon Network. And obviously all of the classic Warner Brothers cartoons. It's also very easy to compare this acquisition to Comcast's acquisition of NBC. As you see these content providers getting bought out by telecom and internet firms, with this new advent of skinny bundles and people are cutting the cord, I'm very curious to see how these distribution channels are going to change the way people consume media. Oracle is still struggling to make that buy of NetSuite. T. Rowe Price is still pushing for a higher offering, even though NetSuite stock has been dropping consistently over the last few months. Oracle CEO Mark Hurd is basically saying this is the last and final offer. So will Oracle blink and pay more to acquire NetSuite, or will they do the right thing and hold their ground? And I feel like I've been holding my ground lately with this podcast. The last few weeks, the theme of cloud and artificial intelligence keep repeating. And those topics were hot this week because of the World of Watson conference, and there was an OpenStack conference that IBM also participated in. Let's cover the World of Watson first. I didn't have an opportunity to attend the event, but IBM very kindly made all of the speeches available within a few hours on YouTube. And I was fortunate to have some time off last week, so I spent some of that time actually watching these videos. The most striking thing to me during all these keynote speakers and all these guest speakers is the sheer amount of optimism they have for the future, this future of AI. I did a podcast a few weeks ago where I sort of made fun of the idea of a digital assistant and being able to order your pizza and telling you the weather and having drones drop off all the stuff you buy on Amazon. I purposely painted a world that was clearly advanced technologically, but was somewhat consumer-focused, a little bit gluttonous, and I find it interesting to see how professionals who are paid to speak at World of Watson paint the future. IBM's view of the future, Watson will be everywhere in 5 years, from doctor's offices to most corporate boardrooms assisting with mergers and acquisitions. One industry expert, John Kelly, predicted that Watson would be able to predict the future based on event modeling and trending. Eventually, the writer Tom Friedman spoke and talked about how 2008 was a milestone year in technology. That was the year that Watson was introduced. That was also the year that bandwidth and network speeds became affordable and fast enough where information was available at your fingertips. And he sort of lamented the fact that people didn't really appreciate what a milestone year that was, and that was because that was also the year of the financial meltdown. From a societal perspective, Friedman states that humans have never been more interactive and have never been able to share their ideas with more people. Because of this interaction and the ability to share, social change is more prevalent, it's quicker, and never been more possible. He sums up the whole situation with a terrifying and optimistic statement, because this podcast seems to be all about optimism today. He makes the statement how individuals, not nations, have never had more power to destroy. But we also have the power to fix everything that's wrong. I think that's a lot to put on the current technology that's available to us. Yes, Watson and its peers are very good at analyzing information and sorting it. But as these keynote speeches go on to talk about mining asteroids in space and fixing world hunger, these are very human problems and these are very human aspirations to go to the heavens. But IBM's Watson isn't going to fix these problems. Google's DeepMind isn't going to fix these problems. Eventually, they'll help make those calculations, the land, the things that will drill those asteroids. And maybe the medical technology and research will be good enough that you could send a computer to a remote village and do some very rudimentary diagnostics on villagers who have never seen a doctor. But like I said in my opening, do we encourage our children to reach for the stars, to shoot for those insane lofty goals? Or do we root them in the reality and the minutia and the grinding tasks and bureaucracy it takes to reach the heavens? And while I opine about the possibilities of artificial intelligence in the future, Google's DeepMind created its own form of encryption that only it can understand. Researchers had three computers try to send messages to each other. They were called Alice, Bob, and Eve. Alice had to send a secret message that only Bob could read, while Eve would try to figure out how to eavesdrop and decode the message. The experiment started off as plain text, and then Alice, who was the sender, eventually started to convert it to unreadable gibberish, which Bob had to learn how to decode using a cipher key. At first, Alice and Bob were very bad at hiding their secrets, and Eve would figure it out. But after 15,000 attempts, Alice worked out her own encryption strategy, and Bob figured out how to read it with an encryption key that was only 16 bits long. And eventually, Eve was only able to guess half of the bits in the message. So she was just basically guessing at random. So here's an application of artificial intelligence that I never really thought about. Determining encryption and managing encryption. I truly think that this will have far-reaching business and military application. And what will all this lovely artificial intelligence run off of? The cloud, of course. Last week's podcast, we spent a lot of time talking about the four major cloud providers' differences and what they offer, and why a person would want to go to one versus the other. But the major concern for cloud is that once you're on a platform, are you stuck there forever because it's impossible to move? And that's where the OpenStack Summit comes in. As IBM had their fancy World of Watson conference, the OpenStack Summit showed that you can run the same software on 16 separate OpenStack platforms. All 16 vendors that participated in the summit showed that they could have programs running on their platforms in under 10 minutes. IBM apparently participated in the OpenStack Summit, and their general manager of cloud strategy, Don Rippert, explained that all 16 companies will compete, but interoperability is a rising tide, and it makes things better for all of us. And since IBM has been such a popular topic with this week's podcast, we might as well keep it going. And we're going to actually discuss desktop machines for a second. IBM recently said that Macs were much cheaper to own over Windows PCs. IBM was quoted as saying several months ago that while Macs cost more, they eventually cost up to $450 less to operate than a Windows machine. And this is relatively old news, as I said before. IBM's been making this statement since they started buying a lot of Macs. But I think the timing is interesting. We don't typically cover desktop machines too much on this podcast, but over the last few weeks, both Microsoft and Apple announced new PCs. Apple's big innovation with their laptops is a scrolling touch bar at the base of the keyboard. Microsoft released a whole new series of Surface desktops, and their studio machine, which has a touch surface and a new peripheral device that allows you to interact with the screen in more artistic endeavors, it's a beautiful machine. This is truly the first time that I've seen Microsoft destroy Apple from a design perspective. Considering the apathetic reaction to the new iPhones, while I don't think Microsoft has a chance in the mobile space right now, Apple should be worried. People are not reacting well to their products, and they have to come up with some new innovation, something to keep their audience looking towards the future and wanting. And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music is provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.